This is Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000. Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Always a good one. Carmen and Yurko.
First with Christmas music again. Happy 2020. It's been a crappy year. But hey, let's look forward to the holidays. We got some beautiful weather this weekend. Great story, by the way, in the Daily Herald by our buddy Barry Rosner about Sylvie's journey through 2020. As if it hasn't all been crazy enough, back in early spring, really when COVID was kind of getting going, Sylvie got the diagnosis that he had, that he has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but he beat it. He's in remission now, and it is a great story in the Herald today. So I encourage everybody to check out Barry Rosner's piece. It was really nicely done, very in-depth and detailed, and Barry is a terrific writer. So it is worth your time at some point this weekend. Make sure you check that out. Big thanks to everybody who took part in Bourbon & Bacon, our virtual event last night. Thanks again to everybody around these parts for all the support, and Mike Thomas and Craig Karmazin for allowing me the opportunity to spread the word through these airwaves, because, you know, a lot of ears are listening, Yurk, and that means more people that are willing to be extremely generous in these tough times for a great cause. All the proceeds, every last cent, goes to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation of Greater Illinois. And I'm blown away by the amount of money we raised in a year where we couldn't be together at Binney's like we normally are. So truly an incredible sum. I never in my wildest dreams thought we'd get to where we got last night. So, and thank you for your video and Waddle as well. That was a hot item. The drink, the cocktail package, Yurko, very hot item. Yes, so thank you as always.
Well, you know, the swirl.
Got to do it's the infamous. Swirl. The counterclockwise swirl, Yurko.
Yeah, and the, you know, its reputation precedes it.
So I'm great.
Sure it was a... It was hot and bothered. Did you auction off a foursome with the good kid?
Yes, that was part of...
That may have brought world record prices.
It might, yes. Yurko gave a foursome for next year at some point to his club, Lincolnshire, in beautiful Crete. Excuse me,
Crete,
if I can speak. Yes. Yurko's going to take some folks out to golf. I'm going to take some folks again out to Seven Bridges at some point next year. So we had some of that fun stuff. We had three great speakers, Nick Nagley from Whiskey Acres, Greg Butera from... who's a longtime like mixologist expert at a bunch of great restaurants and bars in Chicago. He's now one of the brand ambassadors for Maker's Mark. And we had Freddie No, the legendary No family within Jim Beam, speak last night. And I think people really enjoyed it, and they learned a lot about whiskey. So it was a different take.
Wonderful.
It was really well done, though, and hopefully we're all back at Binney's 1 year from now, celebrating in 2020 for the 7th annual Bourbon and Bacon. So thanks to everybody. The latest news out of the Bears is, well, I don't know how they've responded to this just yet, but Adam Schefter, I told you about 15 minutes ago here, tweeted that in a series of I should say it's one tweet, but it's got a bunch of information on different teams. You know, no positives in Denver, San Fran, Houston, Philly. Another Packer is positive. They played last night. This player did play, according to Schefter. And then there were positive tests today in Cincinnati. Now, the Bengals aren't by, and one here in Chicago after they had to shut down yesterday. So we'll see how that affects the rest of the day, how it affects things going forward. You're trying to prepare for Tennessee. We had Mark Potash on, and Yurko said, is this where you're forced to keep things simple because you've had an interrupted week and you've got a bunch of injuries on the offensive line? Will they go down there and try to keep it simple and just run the ball, maybe play some I formation like they did last year when they put a halfback in the game, or fullback, I should say, all of a sudden into the game against the Los Angeles Chargers? Does this game this week lend itself to that sort of game plan, Yurk? I mean, ideally it seems like it does, but who knows with Matt Nagy?
Right. I think it probably does. You'd want to keep it simpler, but the Bears also find ways to win games they shouldn't win. You know, against Tampa, you didn't think they were going to be able to beat Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucs when they came in.
I did, in fairness. I did call that one.
Except for the injuries they had the wide receiver position, but you'd compare the two quarterbacks, and you certainly thought one was better than the other.
True.
You know, but they still do it. They do it over the course of time. They find a way to maybe beat teams they shouldn't beat. Getting the points is a little bit easier to go ahead and have some faith in the Bears this week. Plus, Tennessee's lost too. They're not a juggernaut themselves.
No, their defense has been terrible.
Early. if you can find a way to stop their run, and the Bears have had a little bit of trouble going against some backs that they've been able to pound them a little bit. But if you can stop the run and force them, that play-action pass will kill you. Mm. If they're successful on the run, eventually that play-action pass is going to end up killing you, and then the Bears aren't going to have a chance in this game. But if you can stop the run, I think the Bears can do something. Still got to score points, though. Still got to score points, and sometimes that's a challenge for this team.
I think you're right, York. I mean, like, the Titans' defense has been terrible this year. It's been an issue all year. They're top 10 in the NFL in yards per play allowed at probably – I shouldn't say probably. Who the hell knows with this offense? But it could bode well for a team that struggles to move the ball. I mean, the Bears are like third worst in yards per play, but this Titans team is one of the 10 worst in the NFL defensively in terms of yards per play allowed. They've surrendered more than 400 yards in three of their games this year. They've been outgained a number of times, even though they've won some of those games. The Titans have seven sacks. I mean, Clowney's given them nothing. He's banged up again this week. Seven sacks, that's it.
No, I heard you guys brought up Clowney yesterday. I want to get both your opinion. His career, because he came out with such fanfare, above average, average, from what he was supposed to be, the hype, or no?
I'd say average.
Well, the hype was built on one play, wasn't it, against the University of Michigan?
He had a great senior season, or junior year, whatever he finished. He didn't come out.
He did. I mean, like,
he's a three-time Pro Bowler, though.
Where was he last year?
He was in Seattle last year, right?
He was a disruptive force in Seattle. And in that playoff game, I mean, he was all over the place. He was causing chaos and problems.
I think that the hard thing on him is he is probably one of, if not the best run defenders at the, you know, the edge rush position.
Probably right.
And so he doesn't get home in terms of sacks as much as some other elite defensive ends, but he is a, you know, he does both.
That's fair.
So I think sometimes, like, he doesn't put up the gaudy stat sack numbers, but he's
disruptive.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, maybe I'm selling him short then a little bit when, if I say average, maybe he's been slightly above average. Like, he's got 32 sacks, though. And I don't know what Mellor's saying. That's a salient, but that's a good point. Fine. He's got 32 sacks in 82 games. You know, I mean, like, he does have a bunch of TFLs when you look at his career. Like, in his prime 3 years,
I mean, he did. How many plays for negative yardage does he have then?
Well, so Jurgen is like his three prime years, right? 16, 17, 18, when he was a Pro Bowler in each of those 3 years, and he played 14, 16, and 15 games in those years, respectively. Those were the good years in Houston before he went to Seattle last year. He had 16 TFLs in 16. He had 21 in 17. He had 16 again in 18. And he had 6, 9.5, and 9 sacks in those games. He had over 20 quarterback hits in two of those 3 years. So, I mean, he was disruptive. I guess you're right. But all in all, I think he's kind of been
if I rush the quarterback on first down and I sack him for a three-yard loss, it's second and 13, right?
Yeah.
Okay? If they run a running back and we stuff him in the backfield and you get credited for a TFL and he's got a three-yard loss, it's still second and 13, right?
Yeah.
Are both plays equally impressive, or is the quarterback sack more important than the run play for a negative yardage?
I'd say they're both equally, I'd say they're the same, right? You got a negative play, negative 3 yards, right?
But for one reason or another, the love for the sack number overtakes the TFL number, even though both plays are they count losses.
True.
They would be equally. Statistically, they are equal. But for one reason or another, one carries much more weight than the other.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I mean, it's Pro Football Focus, so, you know, I know some people have an issue with the way they grade things, but he graded out last year for the Seahawks at an 87.3.
He had a good year last year.
I mean, that's excellent. Yeah. You know, that's right in line with all the Pro Bowl seasons that he had with the Texans. Until he got injured last year for the Seahawks, I think he was having a pretty damn good year.
He was, yeah. It was Yurko's point that he was still pretty disruptive. But he was disruptive. He's given now, he signed late. You know, you had this crazy COVID summer, spring and summer, right? He signed on the eve of the season, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes.
You know, because he was looking for a good deal. He signed late. But I'm just telling you, he's given them nothing this year. I mean, he doesn't have a sack in the seven games he's played. They have seven sacks as a team. You know, so this is not a formidable group that the Bears are going against. It's not the Titans defense that we saw a year ago. They've really run games on the strength of Tannehill and Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown and their play action pass. That's how they've won games this year. And, this game ain't a death sentence for the Bears, I'll tell you that. As I dislike a lot about this team, mostly their offense, I wouldn't be shocked if the Bears moved to 6-3 this weekend.
Here's the beauty. Both teams in the last 2 weeks are 0-4 combined, right? 0-2 and 0-2. Two-game losing streak.
Yeah, you would be correct. That's correct.
They started 5-0. Tennessee looked like a juggernaut, started out 5-0. They've lost two games. So theoretically, they're reeling as much as the Chicago Bears are reeling.
Theoretically, you are right, my friend.
So there you go. Somebody has to win.
And they've got a game here where they just, I'm telling you, they could be a little sleepy. It's a non-conference game, and they have three huge games coming off. They've got two games in their next three after this one against the team they're fighting with in their division. They're home against the Colts, then they go to the Ravens, and they're at the Colts. That's going to be a huge stretch for the Titans.
Nobody would blame them if they overlooked this game. But I am telling you, Vrabel is in that locker room going, gentlemen, simply this. This is a bunny for us. We need this one to go ahead and propel ourselves into the next one. That's what he's trying to convince them. This, you cannot overlook this. They're in the NFC. I understand. We need that. We're at home. We need to control this. And he's got to remind them over and over and over again. He'll probably put some defensive film on from a couple years ago to show them how dominant they can be. This is how dominant they can be. If they get into a groove and they start feeling good about themselves, and that's got a lot to do with it. When you feel good about yourself, different things happen. You play a little bit better than you actually are. You're feeling all tingly inside. Good things are happening. Vrabel's telling his guys, let's not let these guys feel good about themselves. Keep the doubt there. Keep them guessing on whether they're going to be able to or not, and let's go ahead and get this out of them. And if I'm the Bears, and Matt Nagy, I'm like, hey, this is an absolute must win. They'll be overlooking us. We've got to go in there and be fundamentally sound and just keep digging, 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 and then we'll end up winning this thing.
Yurko's got his smoking hot keys to the game coming.
I just gave them to you.
Well, I know that.
Yurko. Hey, hold on. Before we go forward, you got keys to the game.
Yeah,
seventh race at Keeneland today. Gretzky the Great.
Oh!
The 11 horse. I'm telling you.
Seventh race?
Seventh race. He's the 11 horse. It is Gretzky the Great. And then the race before that, Dirty Dangle.
Wow, you got some hockey stuff
going on.
Got
some hockey stuff in here. And the race before that, it's Danny's California, if you're a name better. Danny California.
To bet that in honor of Zetterman, I think.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. I'm going through all the names in this thing on my
here we go.
On my account.
It's on.
There is some good stuff in here, guys. You can have a good time.
All right, that's good. Thanks, buddy. Yurko's Smoking Hot Keys are coming up next.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Get Carmen and Yurko podcasts on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
I'd like you to meet a real inspiration.
Carmen and Yurko. ESPN 1000.
Good thing it doesn't feel like Christmas yet. Now with 70-degree temperatures, love this. Carmen and Yurko first for Christmas music each and every year. That's a good one. Bears in Week 9 on the road at the Titans, where they are about a 6-point underdog, give or take. Look-ahead line for everybody who's wondering for next Monday night. Of course, the Bears will wrap it in Week 10 on Monday night against the Vikings. Bears are a 1.5-point favorite. It would be only the second time this year that they're actually a favorite, Yurko. We'll see how Vegas reacts after what happens this weekend. The Vikings are at home against the Lions. Bears are on the road at the Titans. But the look-ahead line as the Bears is about a 1.5-point favorite. But anyway, I digress. Yurko, I ask you now. Well, first, let's play your great open.
This is Yurko's Keys to the Game.
Trubisky stepping up, fires down the sideline. Robinson makes the catch.
Yurko gives us what to watch for in this week's Bears game.
And it's intercepted, and it's Eddie Jackson.
Under pressure again. Can he get away? No, he can't. Of course it's Mac.
Yurko's Keys to the Game, only on ESPN 1000.
Yeah, they're the best around. Yurko, I ask you, what are the keys to a Bears win in Nashville this weekend?
Carmen, I'm glad you asked. Okay, this is an important game for the Chicago Bears. They're traveling down to the Music City. They've got to find a way to get a victory. I remember Alex Brown in the safety dance to win a game in overtime down there.
That's right.
I don't care how you do it. You got to find a way to go ahead and win it. These are the keys to the game. Key number one. Thank you very much there, Mr. Miller. You are on point today. You got to force turnovers, Carm. You've got to give this offense a couple of bunnies where they can just go ahead and kick it in from the 10-yard line. Force turnovers. That's what you've got to be able to do. Key number two. No stupid throws by Nick Foles. I've seen some of the dumbest throws in the history of football by Nick Foles under pressure, just throwing it up, hell-bent for election, not knowing whether our team's going to catch the ball or the other team's going to catch the ball. throw the ball out of bounds, especially if you're out of the pocket. He's been out of the pocket a couple of times when he's decided to heave the ball downfield with no direction whatsoever. That has got to stop. Key number three. Karma, I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't care how they're going to do it.
Just do it.
Just get it done. Just this win, offensive baby. Line has got to find a way to become a cohesive unit. Now, you didn't have practice this week. You didn't meet as a team and go through a ton of walkthroughs this week.
They will practice today, though.
Yeah, well, thank heavens it's open. It's got to be a Tier 3 employee that has contacted that COVID.
When you're done, York, I'll give you the latest because the NFL Network is reporting something different, okay? So when you're done, I'll update everybody.
I appreciate it. This unit has got to find a way to be cohesive. They've got to find a way to come together. It's incumbent upon the individuals that are out there, the five of them, to be able to communicate and to talk and get things working in the right direction. I don't know who you are. I don't care who you are. The five guys that get suited up, you got to find a way to be able to play together. Key number four. Boy, and this might be the most important key of all. The coach, the little brainiac on the sideline, the kazoo, the guy with the helmet, there's a special padded helmet that he might need.
Stop it.
The great kazoo, Matt Nagy. If this guy could just put together a game plan and call plays in a rhythm and in a sequence that is somewhat complementary of each other, that someone resembles that of an intelligent football coach and one of the quality offensive coordinators that could be out there, it would be an absolute pleasure to be able to watch that happen. If all this happens, it's a chance for a Bears victory in Tennessee. And those are the keys to a Bears victory in Nashville, Tennessee.
Smoking hot. Yurko talked about some of their success down there. Remember the last time they went down there, Bears fans drank them dry. Didn't they run out of Miller Lite down in Nashville?
Miller Lite, yeah. They don't drink Miller Lite down in Nashville.
Unbelievable, man.
And they don't like it. They don't like it when Hawks fans come to see the Predators.
That's right. I know. The weird trend with this series, and I mentioned this yesterday, the road team has won five straight in this series, going all the way back to 98 when the Titans left, you know, and the Oilers in Houston left for Tennessee, and they became the Titans. So that's kind of strange. The road team has won five straight in the series, going all the way back to 1998. Yurk, here's the latest. I saw J.J. Stankovic retweet this from Tom Pelissero in the NFL Network. Bears center Cody Whitehair's positive test for COVID-19, reported by at Rap Sheet yesterday, that's Ian Rappaport, was confirmed today. No new positive test for Chicago in Thursday's testing. So that would seem to contradict Schefter's, unless Schefter was talking about they can't test this morning and no results already, though, can they, guys?
No, they couldn't do that.
No. So you've got the NFL Network contradicting right now the tweet from Schefter, and Stankovic quote tweeted and said, that settles it. Bears will practice in a little over an hour. So it sounds like they're going to practice and that there is not a new positive test. Tayshaun Gibson, also meeting with reporters, said that he was apparently praising Cody Whitehair, Yurk, because he said, listen, Cody has it. He's been wearing his mask constantly. And he goes, that might have helped us prevent something really bad from happening. So, you know, hopefully that is the case. Cody will obviously not be able to play this weekend. Might not have played with calf injury anyway. But Ifedi, who was shut down because of close contact, is negative. And he's been removed off that list, and he should be good to go. So it's so fluid, Yurk. I mean, we're going to wake up Sunday morning, and who knows what to expect. The offensive line has struggled anyway, and because of injury, we know they got a lot of moving parts. And now because of COVID, that'll continue to be the case. But like you said in your keys, somehow you got to find a way. I mean, it's just not a league for excuses, right?
Yep,
and you got to somehow find a way.
Find a way.
Boy, I tell you, the poor kid last night, and, you know, I was doing my bourbon and bacon event. I did have the game on. I had it on silent. When we were done at about 8:30, I watched the rest of the game as I was doing some work for today. The left tackle who had to play for Trent Williams, well, he really struggled, man. It does sometimes, the San Francisco 49ers are just depleted, completely depleted with injury and COVID, and Trent Williams could not play because of COVID, right? And that kid that was in there was like a turnstile. I mean, it does go to show you sometimes how hard it can be.
Did you hear the
when you're playing left-handed?
Did you hear the nugget that Greeny gave out to start the show yesterday?
No.
From ESPN Stats and Info, the 49ers, who obviously everyone remembers, throttled the Packers
twice in the
NFC, but more importantly, in the NFC title game.
Right.
Of the eight players who handled the ball in that game,
none of them
were available last night.
How about that?
So, you know, like
8 football weeks of playing or whatever later, and the 49ers had nobody who handled the ball.
Wow, isn't that something? Because of injury or COVID?
Yeah, that's one of the the combination.
Gentlemen, there's no sympathy in the world. Hey, yeah. It's too bad. So sad.
They're 4-5. I know.
Put a team together. Coach them up and let's go.
That one kid really struggled, though. I don't even know his name. The kid who had to play for Trent Williams, the left tackle.
You won't have to remember his name if he keeps struggling. He'll be moving furniture in a couple of weeks.
Hey, a couple quick baseball notes. Merkin, your brother, Scotty, Randy Merkin's brother, Scott Merkin, covers the White Sox for MLB.com. You know, Tim Anderson won the Silver Slugger, and Scotty quoted some tweets from him last night. And I think this caught some people off guard. Anderson has not yet talked to Tony La Russa. Anderson said, quote, "I'm still waiting on him to reach out to me." He followed up and said, quote, "I won't change my style or the way I play for Tony. I will not be changing the way I play or how I approach the game," close quote. And then Merkin wrote, he did go on to add, though, that he's looking forward to talking and learning from Tony La Russa, and that from the players he's talked to that do know him, he's heard good things. So not all bad, but it does have some around baseball wondering, why is Tony La Russa not reaching out to his players? Isn't that what you normally do when you're a new manager? Start calling your guys? I don't know.
Well, especially in baseball, you know, you've only got, 25 guys usually?
Yeah, right. You got 25 guys in the active
roster. On your
roster.
Protected list, at least the 25 guys that are playing on your team deserve to get a little bit of a heads up. Hey, how are you? It's Tony La Russa. We'll get together and we'll give you guys a calendar of exactly what's happening and what's going on as we get together. Just wanted to introduce myself and say hello. I think you're one hell of a ball player. I think you're fantastic. You've really had some good stuff going. I think if we tweak you just here or there a little bit, we can really get you to the next level. You know, that kind of thing.
Even if you send a text, though, I mean, like, why are you not sending a text all your
email.
Guys?
I think an email.
Email. Fine, you're
no, but like, I'm with you, Carm. Like, fine. He did. I have no problem with him. You know, if he didn't want to reach out to the guys before the announcement was made, he wanted to meet the media first. That's fine. You know, I have no problem with that. But now you're talking like over a week after that press conference has occurred. And listen, Tony La Russa, do what you want to do. It's your team now, your clubhouse. You can run things the way you want to. But when you've got so many, when you've been publicly kind of like called into question, like your ability to connect with this younger group of players, and you still haven't either made a phone call or just sent you could send the same text and copy and paste to each key member of the roster that you know are going to be here next year, whether it's Tim Anderson, Eloy, you know, Jose Abreu. Just send one text to each guy and be like, hey, or even if it's in a group text. You know,
I'm sure
someone on the White Sox PR staff could show Tony how to do that and say, hey, just you open the lines of communication now so that the guys know. And that hasn't happened yet?
What aggravates me even more than that, though, is what happened today in Detroit. And I had just heard the name for the first time earlier this week. Someone in baseball sent me a text about Chris Fetter. I had never heard of Chris Fetter. Chris Fetter played in the minor leagues a little bit. He was the pitching coach at Michigan. And apparently Chris Fetter is one of these young up-and-comers that baseball insiders are very, very excited about. And it was told to me that this was the person the White Sox were zeroing in on to be the pitching coach to replace Don Cooper, the young voice opposite the old man, Tony La Russa. Well, he's going to Detroit because he worked with A.J. Hinch years ago in the Padres organization. John Morosi tweeted this. Tigers hiring Chris Fetter as their pitching coach, played a key role in Michigan's run to the College World Series, is a rising star in the industry. Fetter hired by Tigers is a significant win for Detroit within the Central. He was the top choice among the executives in the White Sox front office for their pitching coach job. Hinch and Fetter worked together with the Padres a year ago. They would have been the manager pitching coach combination in Chicago if La Russa wasn't hired instead. Telling you, I got a bad feeling. I hope I'm wrong. Todd Furman joins us live in Vegas when we come back next.
Carmen and Yurko.
Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
On ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports. Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
Well, it's Christmas time again.
Another great one.
Decorations come.
Tis the season. Yurko and I are always the first to play Christmas music for you. Enjoy it. Doesn't feel like Christmas. That's nice. It's going to be a beautiful weekend, everybody. Todd Furman gave us a couple winners last week. He's been hot lately. I joined him on the Dolphins. That was a nice, easy winner. Should have listened to him on Arkansas. Arkansas's 5-0 against the number this year. Razorbacks are finally coming back after a couple of abysmal years. It's Carmen and Yurko here on ESPN 1000, and it's time to talk to Todd Furman live in Vegas. Of course, you follow him on Twitter. You better, at Todd Furman, the Bet the Board podcast. He's all over CBS Sports and Fox, and he knows his stuff, and he's here to break down Week 9 with us. Hey, Todd, how are you?
Doing well, gentlemen, but on November 6th, if you guys are already rolling out the Christmas music, always. I worry about the sanity not only for you two on set, but the listeners and your lovely family members at home.
Last year, I think we busted it out like on October 15th.
Yes,
I mean,
we
waited this year because of COVID. I'll blame COVID, Todd.
That's extremely aggressive, and the question I have to ask is, who's the driving force? Is it you, Yurk, or is it you, Carm, or is it a mutually agreed upon, hey, look, we're going to push it out and we're going to make it a focal point?
I think about 5 years ago, I said, hey, we should be the first ones to play Christmas.
Yeah, it was Yurko's idea originally, and I love Christmas music, so I said, yeah, Yurk, that's a great idea. Let's jump on board.
We were always trying to find a way to promote the show without using cash, because there wasn't a lot of it 5 years ago.
So we're like, well, how do we promote? I can respect that for sure.
Free pub.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, Feeder loves to give the station that always goes to the Christmas music a little bit of love. So I'm like, let's do it first. And then we've got to get some love.
He thinks we're big dummies. I think he tweeted it the first year. After that, he said, you're two idiots. I'm not talking about
him
anymore.
He probably has met us and knows we're dummies.
Exactly. So Bears go to the Titans. You know, I often look at the scheduling spots here, Todd. Now, I know the Titans have lost back-to-back. They're probably pretty motivated. But you got a non-conference game here with the Colts, the Ravens, and the Colts on deck 3 straight weeks after this game. Is this a good spot for the Bears catching 6?
You know, it's an interesting spot. I'm not going to say it's a good spot for the Bears, given how poor Tennessee performed last week against the Cincinnati Bengals. If they would have found a way to win that particular football game, then I think the Bears would have caught them in the ideal scenario. With Tennessee looking ahead to that 3-game stretch that you mentioned, 2 of those games in the division, that'll probably go a long way in defining the AFC South this season. But I look at this Bears team, and while they're only 4-3 straight up, they are 5-2 against the spread as a dog. We know that this team typically plays its best football when they're catching points. And I think from an offensive standpoint, you have to be optimistic that Nick Foles is going to have some time in the pocket. This Titans team supplies 0 pass rush. They went out there and tried to solidify their back end in the secondary, knowing that they've really struggled on the defensive side. If the number got to 7, I'd be inclined to value bet the Bears. But it's a game, quite frankly, that I actually made 6. So it's 6.5. I don't really see a whole heck of a lot of value either way.
Last week, I gave away 19.5 points with Kansas City and turned out to be a winner. And the under came in, so I hit my little parlay I had going. They're giving 10.5 away at home against Carolina. Should I lay the wood again, or should I be cautious?
Well, this is an interesting spot because Kansas City has done so much this year with their secondary, and I think people overlook it all the time because they go, oh, this team really can't play defense. Sure, they're a little bit porous against the run, but how many teams are able to stay committed to the ground game when they're chasing double-digit deficits? So you have to love the way they've been built, giving up just more than 200 yards per game in the air. But it looks as though they could be down Chris Jones in COVID protocol, which really changes the dynamic for what they can do in terms of getting pressure. Carolina, a few extra days to prepare on the heels of that lackluster performance against the Atlanta Falcons. You get Christian McCaffrey back, and knowing that Mike Davis is shown to be a viable runner between the tackles, you'd have to think Matt Rhule and company are going to go out there and employ that blueprint that we've seen for slowing down Kansas City. I look at this game in a 10.5. I want to make a case for the Carolina Panthers. I think Kansas City gets back to running the football on the other side. They get out of Dodge with a win, but I think the underdog has a little bit of value, just not a ton.
Yeah, and Bridgewater is a dog. I mean, he's just been incredible in his career. The Seahawks are incredible under Pete Carroll when they go from their home on the West Coast to play in that early East Coast window, the breakfast football window. 11 straight wins since December of 2015, Todd. That's incredible. Are they due for a loss at Buffalo this weekend?
I never want to say that Russell Wilson's due for a loss, not against the Bills defense. It's really struggled at all 3 levels. They haven't been able to stop the run consistently. You look at how they've performed defending number 1 wide receivers, 31st in the league, which means DK Metcalf could be poised for a decent day. And that's a little bit surprising when you consider they have an elite cover corner in Tre'Davious White out there. But Tyler Lockett should operate well underneath. But on the flip side, Buffalo's going to have some matchup advantages as well. You look at their recent offensive numbers and they're relatively suppressed. 3 games where they they failed to score more than 20 points. Last week, they only mustered 24 against New England, but the weather didn't exactly allow for an optimal situation to move the football. I think you're going to see Brian Daboll get back to basics, spread them out, know that the Seahawks secondary is its major weakness out there. And when I look at this Bills team that's played unders in two out of the last 3 weeks, finally sneaking over the total last week. Mm. It's not the best of the number. This thing did open at 51. It's out to that 54 range. I still actually think there's a little bit of wiggle. I made the total 56 here. I think we could see a track meet given the unseasonably nice weather that we're going to see in Western New York for this one.
That's a good point. One of the Twitch viewers right now wants me to ask you about tonight's Miami-NC State game. I want to say Canes are about a 10-point favorite in that one tonight. Is that right, Todd?
Yep, number has hovered between that 10 and 11 range throughout the course of the week. Of course, NC State dealing with a backup quarterback situation, which they'll have for the remainder of the season. Not quite as dynamic on that side without Devin Leary as their pivot. When you look at the way this game has been bet, we did see some money actually coming on the dog earlier today when the number got out to 11. And the one thing with Miami, you look at some of their recent scores, this isn't a team that goes out there and blows anybody away. Mm. You have to go back to their victory against Florida State. Sure, they beat the Noles by 42, but other than that, they don't have a win by more than 13 points. I think NC State has more than a puncher's chance in this spot to stay competitive, knowing that they've had 2 weeks to stew over a 27-point loss to UNC. I think the Wolfpack are live. Carter Finley can be a difficult place to play on weeknights, even if they don't have fans there to cheer them on.
Clemson's down Trevor Lawrence and two of their most important defensive players going into South Bend. They're still a 5-point favorite. This would be, even without Trevor Lawrence, like to me, this would be a good win for Brian Kelly and Notre Dame with so much national attention on this game. What do you think of Notre Dame as the underdog this weekend?
I think the number's actually perfect. In that 4.5-5 range, I don't think there's a strong case to be made either way. It's been interesting to see the difference of opinions. This price opened as low as 4 at some books out here in the desert, got as high as 7, and you've seen folks looking to lay the 4, others taking the 7 back, and so much of that centers around how you evaluate DJ Uiagalelei as their starting quarterback. I don't think he's going to be asked to do a ton, but this Notre Dame defense is significantly better than what we've seen in the past. I really don't see them at a huge disadvantage on the outside defensively like they were in that Cotton Bowl where Justin Ross and T. Higgins just absolutely abused the Irish corners. But I also don't know what Notre Dame can do from the offensive side. If they're not able to run the ball, do you trust their receivers enough? Ultimately, I come back to the total in this game, and I know it's not the best of the number right now for folks that are looking to bet it, but at 51, still widely available, I think under makes a ton of sense. Brian Kelly knows he can't turn into a track meet. He'll open up the playbook a little bit, but I think Notre Dame's defense can have some success. I'm really curious to see if Clark Lee is able to supply pressure off the edge. The Irish haven't played the most grueling schedule thus far, but we saw them raise their level of play when they had to against the Pitt Panthers a few weeks ago.
We all remember the Saints getting jobbed a couple of years ago with chance to go to the Super Bowl. You know, that was an all-timer. We saw another all-timer last weekend. Not as high profile, but you tell me if there's been a team ripped off as much as East Carolina was last week. Now, they still covered because they were a big dog, but if you had them on the money line, my God, you had to be furious. The conference admitted they botched it. They botched two plays on a drive that ultimately sunk them. Can they respond as a small underdog, or are they going to be totally devastated against Tulane this weekend?
You know, I'll go one step further. I think there were three plays that were bad calls there. The pass interference, the errant fumble, and then the fourth down incompletion. Ugh. That I watched three or four times, and wait, this ball skipped off the turf.
Unreal.
And you mentioned the under money line backers. It's folks that had an under ticket who thought they had multiple chances to get to the window before Tulsa was able to get across the finish line. I worry about how teams respond in this kind of spot. You don't have the home crowd behind you to kind of spur you on and give you the quick start. Tulane's been progressively better. They're showing a lot more balance on the offensive side than I thought they could earlier this season, where it was going to be committed to the ground game. I actually like the road favorite here. If Tulane can get out early, I think this is a game where East Carolina may still be dwelling on what got away against Tulsa last week.
Unbelievable.
I go out to England. Everton, Manchester United, or Manchester City against Liverpool. You choose the game or the match. Which one do you like? Who don't you like?
Well, I'm going to choose a completely different one. How about that for you, Yurka? I'm going to go to 2 o'clock Central Time where West Ham takes on Fulham. Fulham was able to get themselves out of the relegation zone. Of course, it's early in the season, but they beat one of the bottom feeders in West Brom, so I'm not going to put a lot of stock in there. Meanwhile, you dig into West Ham's resume so far, they're towards the bottom of the table, but their last 5 losses have all come against the top 4 teams and Man City. I think this is the perfect buy-low spot for the Hammers. I'm happy to back them here at minus $1.20 on the 3-way. I think that's the best bet going in the Prem today. But if you really want to get wild, and this isn't my bet, so I can't take credit for it, win or lose, I've seen a decent amount of money come in on the over three today between Udinese and Sassuolo. I won't claim to be an expert in Serie A, though, so win or lose, I'm not taking credit for it.
Wow, all right. How about some best plays for the weekend?
You know, real lean slate this weekend, guys. I wish I had a little bit more conviction given the decent run we've been on. But when we look at the college football slate, I actually think there's some value tonight in San Jose State. You have an SEC transfer in Nick Starkel, who should be the best player on the field. San Diego State, I know the metrics are great, but they've played the two worst teams in the Mountain West, in my opinion, in UNLV and Utah State. I think San Jose State plus 10 makes an awful lot of sense. And we're going to go to breakfast football of the American variety in the Pac-12. Arizona State and USC, a unique spot, playing at 9 a.m. local time. I think you could see some growing pains for Arizona State on the offensive side. There's some questions swirling about USC starting quarterback. Will Keaton Slovis be available? I'm going to go under in the first half at 28.5. But if I'm rating strength versus what we've done the last couple weeks, these would be more half bets than full positions.
All right, buddy. Thanks as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure, gents. Good luck with your picks this weekend.
Yeah, all right. There's Todd Furman. Hit the wrong button. There's Todd Furman at Todd Furman on Twitter, the Bet the Board podcast. I thought I was looking at a mistake. I looked at it like five times. USC and Arizona State's playing at 9 o'clock local time. 9 o'clock in California. I kept looking at it going, this can't be.
In the morning?
Yes. That's what Todd was just talking about. They kick off at 11 o'clock our time. That's 9 o'clock.
That's nuts.
In California this weekend, I kept looking at it thinking, is that right? Why are they playing? I have no idea why. I really don't. I mean, there's got to be a reason, but they're playing in. So that's why I kind of like his idea there, the underplay. Could be a little sleepy. Who kicks off a football game at 9 o'clock in the morning?
Nobody does. Can I inform you? Second race is finished at Keeneland. Joy's Rocket is the winner, paid $19.
Damn.
There's some big prices being paid out at the Superfecta, paid $5,300. The 50 Cent Tribe paid $1,200. There are some prices at Keeneland. Nothing but stakes races today, and the last five are the Breeders' Cup races.
That's why you got to love the Breeders' Cup, man. Mm. Mike North has his bonus play for us coming up next.
Did you miss some Carmen and Yurko?
You don't have to miss anything.
Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Midway Jeff Meller thinks he found the answer to my question. Why the heck are they playing that USC-Arizona State game at 9 a.m. local time in Southern California this weekend? I said, I'd never heard of that. 9 o'clock in the morning. What's the reason? It's not like anybody else is using the stadium, right?
But so I've done some digging around, and it looks like the Pac-12, in an effort to put the conference on display.
Because that's their first game.
Correct.
Is this weekend.
So that is why it looks like USC will be hosting Arizona State at 9 in the morning local time.
So they want it in the noon window on the East Coast when everything's getting kicked off, 11 o'clock our time.
And basically get the fans ready for a full day of Pac-12 football.
That's pretty wild, though, man. Can you imagine 9 o'clock in the morning, you're playing a football game? I mean, that's crazy. So that's why Furman likes the first half under in that game. It's Carmen and Yurko rolling along on this Friday. Greeny's coming up next. Waddle and Sylvie back to local programming at 2, and then Bleck and Abdallah 6 to 7 tonight. And then, of course, 7 o'clock Friday night. That means it's me. It's Mike North. We'll have a full hour of gambling talk for you on the Odds Couple. Lots of games in Week 9 and the Big Ten in college. All kinds of fun stuff to talk about. And Mike joins us now with his bonus play. He is at North to North on Twitter, and he joins Carmen and Yurko on the Corona Hotline. What's up, Mike?
Oh, I'm having the time of my life. Just handicapping all morning, guys. I'll tell you, had a decent week last week, 2-3 with the best bets, but also I lost the Penn State game, Carmen. You know this by one point. That wasn't good. But, you know, I also gave out on Twitter at North to North. Check on Sunday the Odds Couple Twitter pick of the Bears and the over. That worked out. So not a bad week, but I got one for you. Oh, by the way, and you're a good week for you, my friend.
Oh, yeah, you're 10-3. Good week.
10-3. Boy, that Tampa couldn't cover that.
Well, he fires the whole staff the week before and changes the name of the restaurant. And they're ready and they're rolling again, right?
That's right.
It was Yurko's dozen. And then I said, wait, it's Yurko's napkin now.
That's it.
And I know a guy that invested a lot of money in a website that don't get half the action that Yurko gets on the napkin.
He was good last week, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he was. He's outstanding. He's hot. But anyway, Arizona.
AZ,
baby. Arizona is playing Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Miami is a decent team. Arizona just knocked off, played Seattle. They had a bye week, and the system has Arizona playing Miami, and Miami as the pick is one of my strongest picks in the last 3 years.
Wow, really?
It breaks down at Miami plus 4.5. Yep. It will probably be at 5 by the time it's over. It's a 325 game. You know how the system goes, Carm. It picks a lot of upsets, picked a couple upsets last week. That's what they're picking. They're telling me, basically, that Miami may, or it's telling me, the method I use, that Miami may win the game outright, is crazy.
Tua versus Kyler should be fun. Miami's scrappy. Look, they were 0-7 to start the campaign last year. Flores' first year. They've got a winning record since. They're 9-7 in their last 16. The last 4 weeks of the season, the Miami Dolphins have the number one defensive DVOA in football. They are a scrappy, solid football team, believe it or not. A little beat up right now. Miles Gaskin not going to play, but I like the pick. So there you go.
And Tua, I don't want to try to pronounce his last name.
Just say Tua.
Yeah, Tua. I mean, you know what? He had an okay game. I know the over-under for passing yards for him last week was 211. I took the under. I mean, come on. It's only his first game, but I think he's going to be more comfortable. By the way, that Christmas music reminds me of when the nun grabbed me out of the pew during midnight mass by the ear in front of the whole congregation and took me out of the church.
What were you doing?
We were talking, screwing around.
That's why. Back in the day, they'd grab you by the ear and they'd drag you
out. Pull North and his buddy out in front of like 900 people.
Classic.
And walk them down the aisle as this song was playing.
Mikey, I'll talk to you tonight, all right?
Can't wait, buddy. See you later.
See you tonight. Odds couple tonight, 7 o'clock after Bleck and Abdallah. Do not miss it. All right, York, what do we think? Bears, Titans. You got a final pick?
Yeah, I like the Bears plus the points. I'm not going to mess with the over-under because the Bears, it's always going to be a tight game. And I can't depend on them to score points. If the Bears are going to win this game, it's going to be an under. But I can't bank on it because I don't have trust in the defense right now to be as dominant as they were early in the season.
Yeah, 21-16 Titans. That's what I'm going with for this weekend. Yeah. But that'd be
is that a cover?
You're that'd be a cover. The line's about 6, so the Bears would be just in there, just underneath the magic number. All right, play some golf and hit them straight this weekend. Right, Yerk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have some fun. You know, you got to do that when the weather's nice because when it turns, it turns.
Enjoy the beautiful weather, my friend. Everybody have a great weekend. Thank you to Mike North for joining us, Todd Furman, Mark Potash from the Sun-Times talking Bears with us. Great job by our producers today, Midway Jeff Meller and Randy Merkin.
Carm, 2 years ago today, Blackhawks fired Joe Quenneville.
How about that? 2 years ago? Wow. Jeez, 2 years ago today. We still haven't made the playoffs like they said they would. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. Enjoy the football and the beautiful weather. Go Bears, and we will see you on Monday for a Bears Monday. Greeny's next. Waddle and Sylvie up at 2. Black and Abdallah at 6. Mike North and I have odds couple tonight at 7. So we'll talk to you then. Have a great weekend.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord has split you.
Stay tuned. We'll have more.
I think the cool people liked it.
I don't think that's whack. I think that's dope.
Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia!